criticism of the World Health Organization's response to the coronavirus outbreak as the number of new cases spikes.
They started today making public this category of cases that they previously were probably gathering data on, but they weren't making public.
And returning to Earth after nearly a year in space.
My balance has taken a little while to get used to, so the physical act of walking was something to get used to.
Plus, the head of Barclays is under investigation over his ties to Jeffrey Epstein. This is What's News from The Wall Street Journal. I'm Kim Gittleson. Let's get started. Now, before we look at why the World Health Organization is coming under fire for its response to the new coronavirus, here's what you missed. The boss of Barclays is under investigation by British regulators over links to Jeffrey Epstein. The bank said Jess Staley had a professional relationship with Epstein early in his career, but had no contact with him since becoming CEO in 2015. Barclays said Staley retains the full confidence of the board. Epstein died in a Manhattan jail last year while awaiting trial on federal charges related to the sex trafficking of minors. A crackdown on foreign funding at Harvard and Yale. We report that the Education Department has opened investigations into the Ivy League schools. It's part of a larger review into universities that the department says have failed to report billions from countries like China and Saudi Arabia. Both Harvard and Yale said they were looking into responding to the Education Department. $207 billion. That's the amount the Congressional Budget Office predicts will be forgiven in student loans by the federal government over the next decade. The CBO predicts the biggest benefit will go to those who borrowed money for professional or graduate school. Now, our main story. China reported a surge in new coronavirus cases in Hubei province to over 14,000 people from just 1,500 a day earlier. The jump came after authorities decided to include anyone who's been clinically diagnosed in the count, not just people who've had lab-confirmed cases. All of this comes as the World Health Organization has been criticized for its response to the outbreak. Our China diplomatic and political editor, Jeremy Page, has more. So, Jeremy, you say there are two main criticisms that have been leveled at the World Health Organization. What's the first one?
So the first issue was the question of the timing of the declaration of a public health emergency of international concern, which the WHO eventually did on January 30th. And the point of that is to better coordinate a global response to these kind of outbreaks. And a lot of public health experts feel it should have done that earlier. And you also saw a lot of governments starting to take matters into their own hand, evacuating citizens from Wuhan, the epicenter of the outbreak, and also imposing their own travel restrictions on China, even though the WHO was advising against those kind of restrictions.
And the second one has to do with the WHO's praise of China's response to the outbreak, right?
That's right. The second thing is about the degree to which the WHO has praised China's response, and particularly when the Director General visited Beijing and met with Xi Jinping. The Director General has been very complimentary. He's said that China is setting a new standard for outbreak response. He's praised China's transparency. And this has been quite controversial amongst public health experts because, you know, there is some evidence that Chinese authorities did not immediately reveal an increase in the number of infections in the first half of January. So there was an issue with transparency there. There's also an issue in that the core of the Chinese response has been this massive quarantine of some 60 million people in Hubei province, of which Wuhan is the capital. And it's unclear, you know, whether that is going to be effective in the long term, but a lot of public health experts feel there's no scientific evidence for a quarantine on such a massive scale. They can backfire by, you know, discouraging people from reporting themselves to health authorities when they're sick.
You talked a little bit about China's efforts to contain the outbreak and questions about how it's counting those people who have been infected. We just saw this huge spike in the number of new cases. Can you tell me a bit more what happened there?
So we're seeing this big spike in numbers from Hubei province because they started today making public this category of cases that they previously were probably gathering data on, but they weren't making public, which is people who have been diagnosed with the virus on the basis of clinical diagnosis. So examination of symptoms, medical history early on, but without laboratory tests, because they take a long time and also it seems have been a bit unreliable. So we're now seeing that much broader category of cases. And the big question now is, are we going to see a similar increase from other provinces, which up until this point also have not made public that broader category?
So has the World Health Organization or the global community changed how they view China's response to the outbreak? And also, didn't we see some internal shuffles in China today as well?
The WHO continues to be very supportive. The WHO chief, we had an interview with him yesterday, and he continued to praise China for responding fast early on. He actually said that the measures they'd taken, this massive quarantine in Hubei, did comply with WHO guidelines, though it was important to monitor to make sure that human rights were being observed. But you are continuing to see foreign governments ignoring the WHO's advice. And then, yes, domestically, of course, you have the sackings of these officials, notably the party, the Communist Party chief of Hubei province and the Communist Party chief of Wuhan city. They were both replaced today with people who have a background, particularly in the sort of public security and legal worlds, so have a track record of dealing with maintaining stability, which I think shows that's a real concern for the Chinese government.
You can find all of our coverage of the new coronavirus outbreak up on WSJ.com. On to markets. We're going to stay with the coronavirus outbreak and look at the impact that it's had on markets. Yesterday, we talked about how the decline in Chinese economic activity caused the price of some commodities like oil and copper to fall. But today, we're going to talk about how there are also areas that are doing quite well, such as the market for niche raw materials. Markets reporter Avantika Chilkati has more.
The commodities where the price has rallied are those where the drop in Chinese output has actually outweighed any decline in demand. So that's things like thermal coal, which is used in generating electricity, and manganese, which is used by steelmakers. Since the outbreak in China, trade has been curtailed, some mines have been shut down, and that's basically squeezed production of these things. If you look at some northern ports in China, where thermal coal is sort of shipped down to Chinese cities, the price of thermal coal has gone up 3.8% this year. And that's gone up to, $82.4. You can compare that to Brent, where the price has actually dropped 18%, as everyone braces for Chinese demand to slow.
And here's what else we're paying attention to today. We'll get a key piece of economic data when the Consumer Price Index for January is released this morning. Now, inflation has been a big puzzle for central bankers and economists. That's because at a time of record low unemployment and sustained economic growth, prices haven't risen by as much as many had expected in the United States. On Wall Street, we'll also get earnings from two big food companies, Pepsi and Kraft Heinz. Finally, Christina Cook spent 328 days in space. That's the longest ever mission by a woman. She came back down to Earth last Thursday, and yesterday she spoke about what it was like to return.
I feel great. I'm really fortunate. A lot of people, because of the different neurovestibular system things and changes that go on for microgravity, when you're readapting to 1G into Earth, you might experience some motion sickness and things like that. I'm really fortunate in that I have not experienced that. But what I have noticed is that my balance has taken a little while to get used to. So the physical act of walking was something to get used to. But I'm feeling great. I think just all of the new things that I'm experiencing, sort of you see your mind wake up to the sensory experiences that define Earth and the things that are here.
Three astronauts remain at the space station, including Jessica Meir, who was Cook's partner in another milestone, the first all-female spacewalk. That's what's news from The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.